It is Locked On Jazz for Thursday, February 27th. The Jazz have lost four in a row. What's taking place? Another defensive outing that, while improved, did not yield results. And when does this come to an end? What does it all mean? We'll talk about it. We'll break it all down. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. Give you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, hopefully making it more fun to be a Jazz fan. Let's all get together. Let's hug. Let's unite. Let's come together. Oh, no. Big picture as the Jazz fall today. We are live for you today on Twitch at Locked On Live. We are live on Facebook, Locked On Live. We're also live on YouTube on Locked On Live. And then we're live on Instagram at DLock09. Hello, Instagram. We're live on Periscope at Locked On Sports. And we're live on Facebook on Locked On Sports. So thanks for tuning in on any of those formats. And if you're listening to the podcast in the traditional fashion, you're hearing it in a little bit different microphone because of that. I had a bunch of different thoughts and things, but I feel like today probably the best thing to do is kind of to hang out with you, chat, answer your questions. The first question right out of the chute from Erod801 on Instagram is it time to hit the panic button? So Erod801 on Instagram, you'd have to let me know what the panic button is. But I think it's, you know, really concerning. We've lost four in a row. My big picture feeling is if we had played the way we did against the Celtics and the Rockets, against the Suns and the Spurs, we'd actually just be 2-2 in this trip. I think the Rockets and Celtics are just better than us. I think the Celtics are the worst matchup we could probably have in the league. I think that the Spurs and the Suns game are the one. The Rockets, I'm on record here. I think they're going about 24-4 the rest of the way. Like, I think they're the two seed. And in Locked On NBA today with Ben Golliver, he asked me whether I'm taking them over the Clippers. And while I didn't quite get there, I certainly didn't say no. Right? So if the matchup is, if the matchup is the Rockets against the Clippers for the 2-3 seed in the playoffs, you know that. On the other topic of the panic button, because I think that's like what, oh my God, like, it does feel like the sky is falling. It doesn't feel good right now. On the other end of the panic button, what I would say is, I do, and this is this isn't the most uplifting thought, but it's probably a little bit of reality, is that we are probably not getting home court. Like, this 5-game homestand, going either 1-4 or 0-5, has eliminated our chances of getting home court. And by eliminating our chances of getting home court, I think it might mean that we take a little bit of a different, you know, the panic button now doesn't have to get pushed for a little while. In other words, we've got to be right by April 15th. And we probably don't have to be right before then. So let's see what we can do to go get Mike Conley right. Let's see how we can integrate Mike Conley into a valuable piece of this puzzle. Let's see what we can do to get Joe Ingles back going. Let's see what we can do to get Bojan back going. Because the fact is, I think we're starting on the road. I'm not, like, there's some things that could happen, but the math is hard right now to try to find and prove that we're not starting on the road. Okay? So, if that's the case, and we're going to start on the road, then let's fiddle. Let's figure out how it's going to work. Let's start Royce O'Neal for Joe Ingles. And if it doesn't work, then sometime in March, let's start Royce O'Neal for Mike Conley. And if it doesn't work, then let's go figure out what the next one is. But I think that at some point we have to, you know, understand, kind of just take a big smart. I think this is smart. Take the pick. What have we done to ourselves? And what we've done to ourselves in this process is we probably have eliminated the chance to get home court advantage. Now, here's where my panic button is, okay? If I have a panic button, it's the defense. So, I've talked a lot about January 27th, the Rockets do what they do. Last night, the post-game conversation is all about how improved an effort, and I agree, I thought we looked a lot better. You know what our defensive rating was last night? A 125. And it's the 54th best defensive performance of the year for us. We've played 58 games. We have now had 4 of our 10 worst defensive games in our last 7 games. We have had, sorry, I'm doing this off the top of my head. We've played 58 games, I believe. Is that right? I think that's right. Unless Toronto is a worst defensive game and then we're at 59. Where's our disaster against Toronto? No, we've played 58 games, I believe. I think that's right. 58 games. We've had our, since that Houston game, we've had our 57th. We've had our 58th, 57th, 56th. So our 3 worst defensive games. Last night was 54th, 50th, 39th, 38th, 40th, 43rd. Holy smokes. So that's my concern. Since the Houston game, and prior to the Houston game, and we weren't playing great teams, but we had not had bad defensive nights. And I said coming into that stretch, the, let's see whether we can handle it defensively. I didn't expect this. All right, next question. Why no lobs to Rudy down low worked out pretty well in the All-Star game? Okay, Corey Woodland. The All-Star game is not the same as a real NBA game. A lot of talk last night on Twitter. Steve Jones20 is a great Twitter follower, does great work, about us not finding Rudy and him only getting 3 shots. That shot's hard. That pass is hard. Like, we're not discussing enough how difficult a pass that is to get to Rudy Gobert there. In fact, I looked at some of it today, trying to, like what would you, so LeBron, I actually almost have to run out of the room and go to the other room because I actually did this work and then decided I wasn't going to use it, and then you asked the question. This was the rabbit hole. I just tweeted out that I went down a rabbit hole and found nothing. This was kind of the rabbit hole I went down that found nothing today. So how many times, like LeBron James to Anthony Davis, Dwight Howard, and JaVale McGee would be the most potent combination of passes to the rim in the league, right? I mean, there's no LeBron 6'9". And if you look at, by the way, the top guys who pass to the rim, they're all big. Like, there's a real size issue here. So, yeah, we want to lob. Okay, so far this year, LeBron James has thrown 65 passes in the entire season to somebody at the rim. 65, that's it. He's thrown 101 passes, 81 leading to shots, 65 for assists, 65 baskets. Like, that's not very many. And that's LeBron to Anthony Davis, Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee. That's pretty thin. The pass that I actually think is a bigger issue for us is we're not getting in the paint and passing out to shooters. I think that's, if they're going to take away Rudy, which they are, we aren't making the pass out. Like, that's the biggest surprise to me this season, is I had this vision of Mike Conley running the pick and roll with Rudy Gobert. 3 shooters space. They bring the third guy in. Conley's diming to everyone. That's not happened. I would guess that Mike Conley's thrown 10 passes all year in the paint to a 3-point shooter. Whoa. That have gone, like, okay, so wait a second. That's probably wrong. So if we shoot like 40% on those, he's thrown 25 passes all year. Right? Because it would mean that we're 10 assists. That's the surprise to me of the season. is that that's what I envisioned. But if you go look at that around the league, I'm going to guess every single one of the guys that makes those passes is 6'8". The more I watch, that's a 6'8 pass. And Mike's not 6'8". And that makes it tough. All right, we'll continue taking your questions. Appreciate you. Appreciate you jumping on. Appreciate you being a part of the community. I've been long-winded early on in the show. Apologize for that. That wasn't the intention. As I was trying to, you know, get you some good stuff. Today's show is brought to you by Steve Carter. Steve Carter, baby! Love Steve Carter over at Intercap. He fires me up because Intercap has had such amazing success since they've joined the lockdown world. Moreover, because Steve Carter's just a great dude. You know when you, like, spend time with these people that are just good-natured, calm, good people? Like, that's how I feel when I stop by the Intercap office and I see Steve Carter. And frankly, if you read the reviews we have been getting from lockdown listeners who use Steve Carter, you know why. That's what everyone says, the same thing. So Intercap is a local lending office. They've been growing rapidly. Why? Because they get deals done. I mean, they started when they just had a few branches. Now have over 15 branches in Utah, from St. George to Logan, Twill to Vernal. Also, Boise, Vegas, Phoenix. They're blowing their numbers out. Like, that's a sign of success. The reason they're blowing their numbers out of the water is because people get treated great. And that's what you get as well, because Steve Carter is your personal locked-on loan officer. Call Steve at 385-885-28. That's 385-885-28. Intercap Lending, NMLS number 190465. Visit intercaplending.com. And it's pretty simple. When you read the reviews of what everybody says about Steve Carter, it's the same thing I shared about right there. Intercap Lending was the best service. Everyone I worked with from start to finish was the best service. They explained everything to me. Answered any questions. They working with Steve Carter was awesome, says Quentin Burroughs. Intercap Lending, give Steve Carter a call. The phone number for Steve is 385-885-28. Locked On Live continues on Locked On Jazz, live from Facebook. Bruno says, can Don be the point guard that is able to create plays and passes to Rudy? Why is he barely touching the ball in the paint? So this is back to Rudy. This is back to Rudy with getting the ball in the paint. So, I mean, there's a few sides to Rudy getting the ball in the paint. I'm sure we miss Rudy some in Rudy's mind. It's a really hard pass. Like, if you go look at the amount, you know, there's two ways you're going to throw that pass. I just kind of talked about the amount, right? If you're trying to throw that pass from outside the paint to the rim, which is the Steve Jones 20 Facebook, like, the amount of guys this year that have assisted, I'll bet you there's four guys in the league that have more than 20 assists at the rim this year from outside the paint. 20. One every three games. Four. I don't know who they are. Jokic is probably one of them. Rubio is pretty good at it, right? So, you know, that's for Ben Simmons, 6'9". I'll bet he's made that pass to Joel Embiid. LeBron, certainly. You know, Donovan, that's a hard pass for a guy at 6'1". I would guess that Joe Ingles has more of those passes from outside the paint into the, to the rim. Not to the paint, to the rim. Like, if you actually watch the highlights that work, it's a pass to the paint. Right? It's paint. It's almost paint to paint. Because Rudy's grabbing it and then taking a step to the basket. Well, if they get a guy underneath Rudy, then that's awfully hard. Joe at 6'9", I would guess, is throwing the most of those for us. Outside paint to inside paint passes are not easy to do. Particularly if you want the lob at the rim, which everyone wants. The idea of the lob at the rim, there is an inflated belief of how many lobs Rudy was getting a game last year. He led the league in dunks. He leads the league in dunks again. So, I think there's a little bit of an inflate of that. Eric Wood. Teams have figured out how to neutralize Rudy. Can you give him a $250 supermax to a player that can be so easily neutralized? That is a big picture question. I'm as big a Rudy fan as there is. He changes the game. Right now, he's not changing the game defensively. Right? There's no question that right now, he's not changing the game defensively. We're seeing last night, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, left side of the floor, isolation, Daniel Tice spaced in the corner, Rudy has got to go. Now Rudy, like, we saw the Jazz play zone last night for the first time. The league has a, that's my panic button, is our inability to defend right now. The league has made adjustments, and we're trying to figure out what the next step is. We got the smartest guys in the league trying to figure it out. We got players that are willing to figure it out. Those are the reasons the panic button's not on. But, you know, I don't like the word panic button, but I'm going with what our first question was. That's my largest level of concern. We just don't have an answer defensively right now. And we're playing better teams, but at the same time, it's real, right? It's a really big struggle for us on the defensive end. And the numbers are dramatic. And, you know, last night we're talking about how much better we felt, but those numbers still weren't great. Has this team's ceiling been lowered since the All-Star break? I mean, if you have a five-game homestand, you're 0-4. I don't know what the, you know, here's an interesting thought for you. What was the NBA preseason NBA over-under win total on the Utah Jazz? The Action Network, I think, did something recently where they tracked it. So the over-under on the Jazz to start the year was 53.5. One group has it 50.5. So we were at 53.5 to start the year. An interesting note is I think we are about, until maybe last night, I haven't checked this in a while, on Vegas Insiders, I don't have it because I don't think I can get tomorrow's line. They usually have something that shows what you are against the spread. Last time I checked, so this is about 2 weeks ago, a week ago, we were exactly the sit. We were 50-50 against the spread. Kevin Pelton, preseason prediction was, let me see if I can find it. Kevin Pelton's preseason prediction on us was 52. 538's preseason prediction on us was 51. Vegas was 53.5. Our ceiling for our team was way higher. Way higher. Including me. That is the number one offensive team. If we can defend in the top 10, we're going to be really good. If we're going to defend in the top 5, we're going to be great. I was there. Since we added Jordan Clarkson, we're, in a lot of ways, we've done exactly that. We're still the number one offensive team, I think. Jordan does some funny things to us, by the way. I love Jordan Clarkson's game, but there's beginning to be some statistical stuff that's not great, honestly, on Clarkson. Where we get our shots when he's on the floor is not great. But since Jordan Clarkson's joined the team, number one in the league offensively. Still. And we, defensively, we're 18th. Net rating, we're down to 5th. The Bucks, Raptors, Lakers, and Celtics are better. Guess what? The Bucks, Raptors, Lakers, and Celtics are better. Big picture. Like, widen out the sample size from the four games we're looking at right now, and gosh, it feels a little bit more kind of like appropriate. The Jordan Clarkson note on that. With Jordan Clarkson on the floor, we're not getting any threes. We take 4% less threes with Clarkson on the floor than off the floor. We take 5% more mid-range shots, 6% more short mid-range shots, and a percent less of the rim. Our field goal percentage, effective field goal percentage, with Jordan Clarkson on the floor is 5 percentage points less than when he's off the floor. Sixth lowest rate. He's in the 6th percentile of impact on his team offensively shooting. He's great. He's not creating for anyone else in that greatness. Now, our bench needed it desperately, right? We've been great. You know, we've been really good since he's been there. So it's not as though I can criticize him too much for that. Wow, we have the first, what kind of trade package can we get for Rudy Gobert? Rudy Gobert for Jaylen Brown, who says no. We're pushing today. I love it. Are we going to lose to Washington? I mean, if they don't play defense, we're not going to lose. We got to stop them. Hi from Greece. We need Joe Ingles back. He is our glue guy. There's no question. Joe was great on DJ and PK this morning on 1280 The Zone. You can go back and listen to that at 1280 The Zone. Some good stuff, by the way, at UtahJazz.com on Roundball Roundup. That's their podcast that they've got that's really good. Chunga's doing a nice job with that. And so, you know, there's a lot of good content out there other than me just babbling. So I guess my point. Chuck Thunder from Periscope. Good morning, Locke. What has happened to Ed Davis? He wasn't he the second best center on D last year? Plus minus last year, Ed Davis was the second best real plus minus defensive center. I don't know what happened to Ed Davis. I thought it would work. Maybe the match isn't great. He's never been a very good pick and roll player. I thought in the second unit with him, playing with Boyan and other players, we could run other stuff than pick and roll with him and have him be successful and be a, you know, we need offensive rebounding. It's really important. He's obviously been battling injuries recently. I would tell you this, behind the scenes, his value has been awesome. He's incredibly valuable to the franchise and the team. So don't, like, those are the subtle things you don't see. He's just a super dude. So he's brought value, not on the floor the way we wanted. I don't know. It's a little surprising. My Periscope guy's just throwing out every trade imaginable. Could Mike Conley net us Aaron Gordon? It's actually interesting in the sense that Orlando's got to do... I just think anything with Orlando's interesting. I think Orlando's like the most interesting team in the league other than Houston right now. They've not done it. Jeff Weltman and his crew took over that team. They haven't done anything. And they've got Bamba, Isaac, Vukovic, and Gordon. You can't have that. Like they have to do something. I think they have to move Aaron Gordon. I don't know that I like him a huge Aaron Gordon guy, but hey, usually I'd be like dismissing any of this stuff. I'm here for therapy and support and love and making you feel good today. That's what I'm here for. Live show today brought to you by Shamrock Auto. That's Rob Taylor. For those who are new to the show, we had some fun with Rob where I used to call him by the wrong name and I would call him by the name of the Matchbox 20 guy, which is only appropriate since Matchbox 20 has my motto in life. I'm not crazy. I'm just a little unwell. Shamrock Auto is out in Pleasant Grove. They pride themselves on used vehicles, nearly new vehicles. Cars that are 6 to 12 months old, 5 to 20,000 miles, Suburbans, Yukons, big SUVs. Great selection. Here's the backstory on Rob. He started his own car dealership. He had Brady Kimball come along with him, who's been a technician for many, many years. So now he sends Brady out to go get all of the cars and make sure that that they're great deals. And then his whole concept that he really believes in passionately when you talk to him is that he's going to give you this buyer experience that's just like quick, boom, bang, go. Test drive your car. We'll get your financing done. We'll get it all done for you. Give Shamrock a call. 801-319-2250. Mention you heard Shamrock on Locked On Jazz, and Rob will give you family pricing. That's, speaking of family, that's like Rob's cell phone. 801-319-2250. Rob's greatest pride is when you tell him what kind of car you want, and he goes out and finds it for you wherever it might be and brings it in for you. People come from out of state for Shamrock because of the experience they get with Rob. That's Rob Rob Taylor at Shamrock Auto, 801-319-2250. I'd go forever today, except for as CEO of the Lockdown Podcast Network, I'm always hammering our guys for doing 30-minute shows and not longer, so I will actually hold this to somewhere around there. At this point, what do you think the odds are the Jazz bring back the same unit next year? Wow, we're like turning the page. We never bring back the same unit in the NBA. Alex, Tony Jones tweeted out a quiet locker room last night. Are the players not as close as we thought? Well, that's an interesting question, Alex. So they've lost four in a row. Would you want a loud locker room? Like, I don't know how you equated a quiet locker room to not getting along, right? So a raucous, loud locker room, not seems good. Seems like a team that doesn't care that they lost. A yelling and screaming, fighting locker room doesn't seem good because then they're yelling and screaming and fighting. So I'm not going to go, I can't take that one. Utah Jazz, you can't be an elite defensive team while being last in steals, blocks, and deflections. Are we last in deflections? Really? So that's largely probably true. That's not entirely true, actually. You can be a pretty elite defensive team if you don't foul, contest the shots, and defensive rebound, even if you don't force turnovers. Ian Furness, Seattle. What? The great Ian Furness, longtime host at, I think, 1280 The Zone and 13, maybe 1322. Now on 950 KJR, maybe with other job titles coming that I don't know if they're official, so I shouldn't say what they are. Fox TV, Seattle Seahawks reporter. Ian Furness chimes in. Bad perimeter defense or Boston just has one of those nights shooting the ball? Well, I think Boston's truly like the worst matchup for the Jazz with that, with their size. And I, you know, Boston and Houston are the two teams that just, I think, have us the way they play, who they are, what their personnel are. Last night, Boston shot distribution is not very good. So Boston gets, you want to have like your ideal shot distribution is 40% of your shots at rim, 40% of your shots at three. Last night, Boston shoots 28% of their shots at the rim and 29% of threes. You kind of like that. The problem was that Boston went and just started to make an inordinate amount of shots at the rim again. And so Boston shot 19 of 22 at the rim last night. We are allowing a very, very high percentage of shots at the rim because Rudy's not able to get to the rim to help. And so shooting percentages are spiking. They didn't actually do anything. Like their mid-range shooting last night was 42%, which is pretty much league average. Their three-point shooting last night was a little higher than it probably should be. It was 11 of 26, had 42%, and we were 31%. But I think if they go 10 of 26, just doing some quick math in my head, that's 40%, about the 37%. So they made like one more three than they usually would. The real issue is by spreading the floor, by moving Tice out, by getting Rudy off the rim. Mike D'Antoni's quote the other day, if Rudy's at the rim, we're doing something wrong. They went 19 of 22 at the rim. And that's unusually high, but I'm guessing those shots weren't very hard. And they're elite level athletes, so they get to the rim. Ian Furness, maybe we should talk one of these days. Great to hear from you stopping by. Is it fair to expect a seventh seed and a first round exit? Is it fit? I'm actually like, somehow, like, there's a little lawyer in me there that's like I'm analyzing the word fair. Like, I don't think we'll be the seventh seed. I think we could be the sixth, frankly. I think we could be the fifth. I actually don't care at this point. Like, that's kind of where I opened the show, and I'm not going to say that we shouldn't be analyzing stuff between now and then. But you know what? We've had a bad week. We're 0-4 this week. Now the game is, how do we get to be right? What is the maximum we can be by April 15th? When the NBA season comes to an end, we finish the 14th. Where can we be? And how do we get better between now and then? I think that's a little bit what happened with the lineup thing yesterday. You know what? Mike Conley, who has not been great, and has not been, as I talked about, what I anticipated, he's got to be a part of us being successful. By the way, 538 projections have the Jazz at 50, the Thunder at 49, and the Mavericks at 49. And they have the Rockets at 55. That's my point. Like, the projection numbers for us to get home court at this point are almost. And does it really matter at this point if we are? I would rather be 6 or 7 than 5, frankly. So does it matter if we're 5, 6, or 7? Let's get us right. Whatever that takes, let's get us right. Maybe that pulls the burden off. Maybe that releases some tension. Maybe that lets the guys go and lets them play. No more excuses for the Jazz, says Mr. Mack. I don't know if it's the real Mr. Mack. I actually have not heard any excuses. I haven't. Out of them? Maybe out of me every now and then. Out of them, I haven't heard any excuses. Like, they're pretty open about the fact they're not playing well, they're not defending well, and they got to be better. If you were to reevaluate your expectations for this team, where do you stand? I kind of feel like I'm surprised that we're not defending. Okay, so I'm really surprised at the defense problems. And that's my largest concern. Like, has the league changed? Has something changed? Can Rudy not influence the game the way he did? Like, that's got to be what the last, the last four games is one thing, but I look more at like the last 12 games. That's a very small sample size, right? But that's also, like, we're great offensively. I thought they built a team that was great offensively. I thought the question would be, where are we going to be defensively? And I'm surprised where we are defensively right now. I didn't see that. I also still, like, a great offensive team is not a pleasant one to play in the playoffs. So let's see. I think the worst part about all of this is we are like the 10th best team. We're expected to be top five. That's probably a good point from Headband Royce on Periscope. Eric Wood, the players are either lying to themselves or they don't realize how bad they are in defense. Don and Rudy mentioned the improvement in defense is a joke. The team is a mess right now. No heart, along with poor coaching, will give you these type of results. Eric Wood with the power dagger. Come on, dude. No heart and poor coaching? Seriously? Like what? 3 weeks ago, heart-filled and brilliant coaching, and now, come on. Come on. There was better effort last night. There was improvement, and there wasn't a great end result against probably the worst matchup for the Jazz. I still say, like, and this isn't great, by the way. Like, don't misunderstand, like, this is some panacea that's perfect here. Had we played the way we did against the Rockets in Boston, we beat Phoenix and San Antonio, and then we're 2-2, and we're all complaining that we can't beat the best teams in the league. Which might be true. Okay? That might be true. But that, like, we'd be complaining about that instead. So, I think that, I don't think that the players are lying to themselves. I thought the effort was better last night. I was stunned when I looked at the defensive rating. But I also, Boston is the third best offensive team in the NBA, I think, that's tough for us. Like, we're going to have a tough time against Boston. We have a tough time against Houston. The Clippers, we don't have a tough time. Montrezl Harrell and Zubac are at the rim the whole night. The Lakers, we didn't have a tough time with until they played Anthony Davis the five, and then they started to cause us some problems because they had speed and length. But as long as they've got Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee in the game, we're okay. Denver, great offensive team. We don't actually struggle that much with them. Jokic isn't comfortable shooting the three. I think he's like 2 of 19 against Rudy in the last like 5 games. And so we don't struggle on that. So I think those are, when you look at those kind of things, those are issues. Since the All-Star break, our defense has just been bad. Like, we just did not come out of the break well. And now it's building on itself, right? Now it's building on itself. Now it's actually got a narrative, false narrative of itself that I think is bigger than it actually is right now. But that's the world we live in. Like, I think I'm always surprised, and I don't live it, right? I'm 0-0 as a broadcaster. I don't really live it the way these guys do, both players and coaches. I'm always surprised how much, like, a Bojan shot going in changes the opinion on a night where there's a larger, like, I'm always surprised by that. But that's the life that they live. So I would say, I would say I think this now has a life of itself a little bit, but the defense has got to get better. Like, I've shared my thought on that. Here was an interesting little number that I found today when I was, it's actually when I looked at the, that number I had about Jordan Clarkson. I thought this was interesting. I'm not sure why. Teams are shooting way more threes. I actually looked because I thought teams, I looked at Boston shooting 19 of 22 at the rim, and I was like, that's Mike Conley. Like, seriously, that was, I'll be totally honest. That was my thought. Like, oh, that's Mike Conley. That's Mike Conley's not big enough to defend somebody. So they drove him to the basket and they switched on him and they scored at the rim all night long. And I was going to do what every other fan did. You know what? I didn't find that. And I thought this was interesting. When I looked at opponents, so then I went to see where teams shoot, when, depending on who's on the floor. So teams are taking way more threes when Mike Conley's on the floor. And I don't know why, but they're taking 5% more threes in the league. It's in the third percentile of all defensive players. And they take way many fewer mid-range shots when Mike's on the floor. It's not what I expected at all. I'm being totally honest with you there. Like, I was looking for the other thing. I don't know. I don't have an answer on why that is. My thought was, you know, if it was earlier in the year, when Rubio first came to us, he gambled all the time and kind of broke the defense. And then we allowed a lot of poor shots. And that was my thought then. I don't have an answer on that one. But there was really not a lot. Teams do shoot 4 percentage points better at the rim when Mike's in the game. So maybe there's something there, but they don't actually take more rim shots, and they frankly shoot 5 percentage points better when Donovan's in the game at the rim. So I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just we're not big on the backcourt at 6 feet and 6 feet one. I don't know. I kind of, you know, I'm a big shot distribution guy. I love that kind of stuff. So I look at it a lot to see kind of what's going on and where. And I mentioned, you know, we just don't get threes off when Jordan Clarkson's in the game. We don't get to the, we don't take shots at the rim, you know, nearly as much when Rudy's not in the game. Like, Rudy still, for all this talk, is our rim guy. I don't know. I don't know if I found anything there. All right. This has been, I don't know. Has this been fun? It is what it is. We'll get ready for Washington tomorrow. I'll run through some of your questions, see what else is out there that I didn't get to. I did go a little long, so thank you for enduring the longer broadcast and staying with us the whole way. This is Locked On Jazz, Thursday edition of Locked On NBA. I was with Ben Golliver, so right now, tell your smart device, play most recent episode of podcast Locked On NBA. Have a good day.